The following show is a replay of KTQA Daily Briefing. For more information, please call 253-330-8821 or visit us online at daily.ktqa.org. Good afternoon! It is Friday, June 26th. 2020. It is 1 minute after the hour of 6 p.m. And as usual, you are listening to the KTQA Daily Briefing. And we're getting ready to spend some time up in the mountains this weekend. I'm looking forward to that. And we have a lot of stuff to get through today, don't we, Becky?
We do. There is a lot of news.
All right. So why don't we get directly to it?
Sure. State-level updates on COVID-19 can be found in multiple languages online at coronavirus.wa.gov. Dialing 311 gets you to the City of Tacoma's non-emergency information line. Health Department officials staff that coronavirus Q&A line 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. 7 days a week at 1-800-525-0127. For interpreters in other languages, press pound when they answer and say your language. You can text the coronavirus hotline at 211-211 in any language. Dialing 211 connects you to community resources statewide through the United Way, and you can also visit wa211.org online.
Moving on to state news, the new statewide order requiring face coverings in most indoor or outdoor public settings went into effect today, June 26th. The order applies to almost all individuals inside of or in line to enter an indoor public space, anyone waiting for or riding public transportation, and anyone outdoors and unable to keep 6 feet away from others not in their households. Face masks should cover one's nose and mouth and can range from bandanas, scarves, or sewn masks with ties or straps that go around the head or behind the ears, made from layers of fabric like cotton, fleece, or linen. Individuals are asked not to use N95 respirators or surgical masks because they are needed by healthcare workers, first responders, and other workers operating in contaminated environments. Cloth face coverings are meant to reduce the release of the virus particles into the air when a person with COVID-19 speaks, coughs, or sneezes. Exceptions from the order include children under 2 years of age, people who have certain disabilities that prevent communication or removal of the mask, and individuals who have been told by a medical, legal, or behavioral health professional not to wear a face covering. The State Department of Emergency Management notes that a business or government agency is not forced to allow unmasked individuals inside. Instead, they can legally make reasonable accommodations, including allowing someone to wear a full face shield instead of a face mask, allowing customers to order online or by phone with curbside pickup or no-contact delivery, and offer video or telephone appointments. The health department advises that cloth face covering should be washed after each use or at least once per day with a soap or detergent. State public health officials continue to stress that avoiding public spaces by staying at home is still the safest option for reducing the risk of contracting or spreading the coronavirus. The state has launched a program to provide 2 free reusable cloth face coverings for low-income Washingtonians below 200% of the federal poverty level. Qualifying individuals seeking to obtain masks should contact the county emergency manager. King County residents can call 206-296-3830 or visit kingcounty.gov and follow links to the emergency management department. Pierce County residents can call 253-798-6595 or visit co.pierce.wa.us.
Speaking of Pierce County, today would have been the earliest possible day for Pierce County to apply to enter Phase 3, but the health department has no intention of moving forward due to a steady increase in reported COVID-19 cases. Additionally, Health Department Director Anthony Chen is warning residents that the county is in danger of losing Phase 2 status. The local health department has also introduced a new Safe Start dashboard on its website where the county's progress towards metrics for each phase is displayed. And here in Tacoma, we've got Metro Parks, Tacoma Public Schools, Green Trike, the Boys and Girls Club, and the YMCA. They are offering a variety of in-person and virtual day camps for children in Pierce County through July 6th through August 21st, 5 days a week from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m., with extended hours available at no extra cost. Cost per child is $175 a week, with fees reduced to as little as $10 for children who qualify for free or reduced lunch. Camps for ages 3 through 16 are available at a variety of locations throughout the city. Weeks have different themes, including robotics, visual arts, theater, coding, dance, pioneer history, nature, babysitting training, and sports, and martial arts. Camps will meet or exceed the governor's recommended safety measures, including physical distancing, classroom size limits, and daily camper and staff health screenings. For more information, including specific locations and registration, visit metroparkstacoma.com and click on Sign Up for Summer Camps. Looking ahead to the fall, Tacoma Public Schools announced at its board meeting yesterday what school will look like in the fall. Different options for elementary, middle, and high school levels will give families the choice to participate in full online schooling or hybrid schooling, where students would attend classes in person for part of the week and participate remotely for the rest of the week. The district is not planning to reopen schools for full-time in-person learning. All staff, students, and visitors will be required to wear masks on campus in the fall, and the district must have a 6-foot social distancing plan for every learning space, excluding hallways or transportation. The document outlining Tacoma Public Schools' plan is available through links at tacomaschools.org or on our website as well at daily.ktqa.org, or at least it will be shortly after this broadcast. Still in Tacoma, Tacoma Public Utilities has been notified of an active scam where individuals arriving in person at local businesses claim to be from Tacoma Power, demand payment, and threaten to disconnect power. These are scammers and are not representatives of Tacoma Power. Tacoma Public Utilities will never call, email, or make a home visit demanding an immediate payment or request payment on a prepaid card. The department will never shut off service without providing written notice at least 7 days in advance. Because of the pandemic, the department has extended power bill due dates from 15 days to 12 weeks, and late fees can be waived upon request. Those with questions about possible scams or extended payment plans can call customer service at 253-502-8600 or 800-752-6745, Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5:30 p.m.
And again, the state is moving from a situation where we didn't have enough tests to a situation where we have enough tests and people are encouraged to get a COVID-19 test if they need it. And there are many sites throughout Washington to get those tests. And here are a few of them. For Seattle locations, visit seattle.gov or call 206-477-3977. For other King County locations, visit kingcounty.gov. For Pierce County locations, visit tpchd.org/COVID test. The Sprinker Rec Center in Spanaway will be hosting a drive-through COVID-19 testing site this weekend. Call 253-798-4000 for more information. The Tacoma Dome will offer free drive-through testing Monday and Tuesday next week, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. That's Monday and Tuesday next week, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. I think that's is that a new time? Because it used, yeah.
That is a new time. As they are wrapping up the end of the month, and we don't know yet what July will bring.
Registration is required by calling 1-888-852-2567 or by visiting thelittleclinic.com. Patients can also call their health providers for tests. In general, patients should arrive at testing sites wearing face coverings and expect the process to take about 15 minutes. Some of the testing sites offer rapid test results, while others have a 48-hour turnaround time. Like I said, Becky and I are in the middle of doing some stuff and actually going away for the weekend for the first time in a long time.
Yep, hoping to traipse around in the woods.
So we're going to get to that, and we're going to move on to today's interview. As usual, you can dial 311 for the City of Tacoma non-emergency information line. 211 will connect you to statewide community resources. Our email address is daily@ktqa.org, or you can call or text us at 253-330-8821. Now on to the interview.
I'm very pleased this afternoon to be speaking with Twyna Noble. She is an organizer, an educator, the president of Tacoma Urban League, and a twice-elected school board member for University Place. That's a lot of hats. Welcome, Twyna.
Thank you so much for having me. It is a lot of hats, but I take great pride in wearing each of them.
I mean, where to even begin? I guess let's start with the Tacoma Urban League. Can you give us kind of an introduction to what is the Tacoma Urban League?
Absolutely. So I have been the president and CEO of Tacoma Urban League for almost 3 years now, and our mission is to assist African Americans and other underserved urban residents in the advancement of social equality and economic independence. And what does that mean? Well, that means in the areas of health, housing, education, employment, and justice, we make sure that we're connecting our most vulnerable community members, our Black community, to resources here in the Pierce County area. And Tacoma Urban League has been doing this work for 52 years now as a leader in the African American community. And we remain devoted to empowering African Americans and other disenfranchised groups to make sure that we are closing the racial wealth gap, closing the opportunity and achievement gap, helping small businesses to start up or to thrive and grow. But we want to make sure that our community is able to enter the economic and social mainstream. And so it is a great privilege to support the community in this way. And sometimes folks want to know, does Tacoma Urban League serve more than Black folks? And the answer is yes. I mean, we are a human services organization whose doors are open to everyone, but we, in our work and in our mission, prioritize the African American community. So our work is culturally anchored and focused on our past and our history, our culture, our present and our future as Black folks in this country.
52 years is a long time for an organization to be around. Under your leadership of the last 3 years, what have been some of the sort of new projects that you've been pursuing, or even some of the things that you've sort of reignited or carried forth?
This is such a good question. We definitely have continued and strengthened our male involvement program, which is a male mentoring program. We have strengthened the girls programming, and it's a partnership now called Sisterhood in the City, but that includes Tacoma Urban League's traditional Girls with Purpose program, as well as a variety of partners. So that's our mentoring program for middle and high school girls, girls of color, primarily young, beautiful Black girls, but it's, again, open to whoever wants to participate. The same for MIP, and I won't say that for every program. The understanding is, this is a place where the Black community can come to be served, the entire family, and we also will serve any community member. And that's the last that I'll reiterate that. We launched under my leadership our Career Empowerment Academy. So it is a program that we've seen before at the Urban League with creating comprehensive career plans, some career coaching, providing access to networks, and introducing community members to industry leaders. But the title, the Career Empowerment Academy, was launched under my leadership. I also launched the Black Empowerment Center. This center helps to improve and protect economic security of African Americans in Pierce County. This is our effort to close the racial wealth gap, and services under the Black Empowerment Center, and the center is here at the Urban League, so it's really an initiative. But the programs include building credit, purchasing a home, starting or growing a business, leadership development, but it's how can we get assets into our community. So it's, you know, increased relationship with financial institutions, trying to figure out how we can get a Black bank here in our community or access to banking Black. So it is a very diverse initiative to build wealth and assets in the Black community, which includes our budget and finance workshops, our home ownership program. Under my leadership, we also launched additional support programs for parenting community members. So we have our family and parenting support, where you can, you know, get take parenting classes if you have children 0 to 12 years old. We have our mom and babies of color support group that meets each week, and reminds me of when I participated in a similar program when my children were younger, but it was there might have been two or three women offer, and not enough support for what I needed as a Black mom and just the needs surrounding my experience. And I love that the Mom and Babies of Color support group actually fills that gap. And we also launched doula support services. So we have relationship with several Black doulas in our community, several childbirth educators and breastfeeding peer counselors. And we use grant funds to pay for access to those services. Many of the doulas, again, are small business owners, but we provide access to families to be able to benefit from those doula services here in Pierce County. We also, under my leadership, launched the Black Business Directory, and that can be found on our website, but an opportunity to buy and sell products or services that are Black-owned. We are bringing on a new program called Leaders in Women's Health. It's an established program in the community, but they were looking for a new home, and happy to bring them on here at Tacoma Urban League. And also, we'll be providing increased housing services with our new partnership with Wellspring, and folks will learn more about that partnership this summer. It is brand new, that will add our staffing capacity, but also add to our programming capacity and helping with some rapid rehousing. So lots of things have happened here at Tacoma Urban League. I mean, you folks can learn more at our website, but we have launched some incredible programs and strengthened programs that existed before. And if, you know, community members are not looking for programming, they can feel free to join one of our volunteer auxiliaries. So our membership groups, our guild, or the young professionals, or check out other things that we've launched, like the Black Parent Alliance, since I've been president and CEO. So lots of good things happening for community members, and a lot of it can be found on our website or on our social media.
That is a really, really broad menu of things. And, you know, speaking as someone who's also worked in nonprofit communities and organizations, you know, sometimes one of those hallmarks is, you know, don't replicate something that's already working somewhere else. And so a lot of those things, like financial security, parenting classes, you know, peer support, those things might on the surface look like they're replicated somewhere else, very locally here in Tacoma. But you also talked about how the Tacoma Urban League prioritizes Black folks in the Black community and culturally anchors it in that community of color. Can you talk a little bit about, like, why something like parenting classes or financial security or stability or, you know, young person mentorship might be culturally anchored from that Black lens? Like, what does that look like? What makes that different?
Absolutely. What makes us different in doing it? Because lots of folks claim to also do similar programming. But what makes us different is we pay attention to the data, because that's what any good service organization should do. We know the gaps. We know the disproportionate impact consistently on our community. But we also have staff and educators, workshop leaders, program directors, who have lived those stories and narratives, who have family members who are in those statistics and data, but also who represent all of the many positive reasons to promote Black excellence and what it means to be Black and you know, working community member, Black and a leader in this community, Black and a parent. So what we do here is we, unlike many other organizations, have paid staff, incredible board members who represent our community, represent the stories and narratives, which is different than having, you know, folks who mean well but don't look like the communities that they're seeking to serve. So the data is important, but we all have lived experience. When we offer, you know, our first-time homebuyers class, we talk, you know, very directly about it is different for some Black community members to go and seek a home loan. Redlining is a serious issue that we have to pay attention to. You know, realtors will sometimes segregate communities and make recommendations on where their clients should or should not live because of the Black and brown bodies that live there. So we take into account what we know is our history, which is the beginning of our history is not slavery. The beginning of our history is beauty and empowerment and filled with kings and queens and riches and entrepreneurial spirit and a village mentality of we take care of each other. And, you know, we also consider what happened with slavery and what has happened for 400 years when we're doing this work. So when we do reentry work, no one has to convince us that it is different when I have a felony and I'm trying to gain custody of my kids and I'm reentering the society. We know that those stories are true. We know the barriers because we have either lived them, our family members have lived them, but, you know, here you don't have to do convincing. We know what faces the Black community, but we also know the power of the Black community and the type of actions we can take when we are connected and working in partnership and with really great allies. So everything that we do here is for us, by us, and always, you know, great quality. So it's, you know, really an honor to be in this work, to just contribute here, you know, my almost 3 years to a legacy that has existed longer than I've been here on Earth. But it is different. It's an experience that folks will remember. You know, we have a saying, once an urban leaguer, always an urban leaguer. You are part of a substantial family. And there's another urban league in Seattle, but 90 urban league affiliates across the country. So you are also part of this strong Black network of individuals who want to see the Black community thrive and reach its full potential and to remove any of the institutional barriers or systems that prohibit that. So it is always different when the Urban League leads it and runs it.
I want to shift a little bit. You have an advanced degree in teaching. What motivated you to move from the classroom and into the boardroom as an elected school board member for University Place?
Such a good question. And I actually joined the school board while I was still teaching. But what led me to join the board, what led me even to the classroom, was my own family. So I started college pre-law and attended University of Puget Sound. And I wanted to be Little Miss Johnny Cochran, this aggressive attorney who would win at all costs. And, you know, that's when I had one child. But as our family grew, you know, towards the end of my undergrad, you know, as a young military spouse, we now were two kids, and I just started to feel far more empathetic. I wanted to contribute to my community in a different way. I wanted it to be near my children and pursue a career that would allow me to raise my family. And education seemed great because, I mean, education, I believe, is the game changer always. And that doesn't just mean going to a college or a university. Even when you educate yourself about the issues in your community, the issues in your country, knowledge truly is power. When you educate yourself around, you know, the pain and suffering of those who are, you know, like you or not like you, I think that's such a beautiful thing. So education is important. But that is where my kids would spend, you know, the next decade plus of their lives, in school. And I wanted to be able to be present and support that and walk that journey with them. I recognized early what it would take to help my kids to not fall behind in school, to try to combat the achievement and opportunity gap. And I needed to be involved as a parent. So I decided to switch from pre-law to education. So got a Master of Arts in Teaching so I could have summers off with my kids, so I could also just be able to support them academically, because, you know, I was teaching in the grade range in which, you know, my children would be in. And I also joined a PTA, and this is kind of transitioning to how I joined a school board. I joined a PTA to continue to be involved. I wanted to be present in the schools. I wanted to support our schools, wanted to be a champion for schools and education and raising money. And I wanted my kids to see me in schools and know that mom is there and that there's not this gap between home and school. But, you know, mom is here, family is here no matter what. You know, we have your back. We're part of this academic journey with you. But I quickly became more interested in policy. The foundation of PTA is advocacy and changing legislation for students across the state. And most people who have been a part of a PTA know that the legislative piece is not the most exciting part of most PTAs. It's spirit wear and fundraisers and popcorn days and movie nights, as it should be. Those are great opportunities and enriching opportunities for our students and their families. But we have to not forget that PTA is about changing legislation and making, you know, like at the highest level, the academic experience the best that it can be for all students. So I felt a little bit lonely, as every year I would run to be the legislative representative, and I didn't feel like it got much traction locally. And I wanted to continue focusing on policy, but I wanted to stay involved in schools and stay near my kids. And so I decided to run for school board. I knew there would be some changes on the board. Running for school board meant I could focus on policy. I would stay in my community as a public servant. My kids would be able to see me. Part of my job would be to be in schools, which I love because, you know, again, I get to additionally support my own children and their friends. But, you know, it just has been just a great experience learning how to serve as a board member at that level. And the position to president and CEO was actually due to great mentorship. Mayor Wooders, who is the mayor of Tacoma now, was the president and CEO of Tacoma Urban League before me. I was her campaign manager back in the day for her first and second city council campaigns, which she won. My undergrad, I forgot to mention, was in U.S. politics. So I knew I wanted to stay connected to politics. I have already mentioned I was pre-law, but I got involved in local politics, ran her campaign, worked on several other campaigns, and built my own network and experience. But we also established a very close relationship. And when she was leaving the Urban League and running for mayor, she mentioned to me I should look into that position. And my teaching job was also sunsetting. I taught for a nonprofit in this very non-traditional teaching position, which was, you know, some of the best years of my life that I spent with students and helping them to learn about post-secondary education and prepare for and then journey off to colleges and universities and certificated programs. But anyway, she mentioned to me, I've worked with you for years. You have what it takes. Although you haven't been a CEO, you started your own business in Ladies First. You've been completely, you know, immersed in this community, served on many boards and committees, have served here at Tacoma Urban League, have launched so many programs. You are passionate about education and you are just willing to listen and learn. And I think you should go for it. So with her recommendation, you know, I got to speak with the board and they offered me the position as a first time, no experience, you know, in a traditional way, CEO. And it has been just a really good, positive experience this entire time. And so I'm grateful to be in this position. But if it wasn't for that mentorship and that amazing Black woman having that relationship with me and believing in me and saying, you all should look for younger. You should look like this is the person who will take the Urban League to the next place that it needs to go. I certainly wouldn't be here. So it's not because I, you know, worked my way up in the organization or anything. It was really due to great mentorship, which I believe in. And that is why, you know, even started Ladies First several years ago when we did.
You know, you have talked about this kind of mentorship that you received and then also serving as a member and a visible face for your own children in your community. Do you ever regret sort of leaving the teaching capacity where fewer teachers look like you and more teachers look like me? I mean, I am a late 30s white lady who is teaching students that don't look like me, that don't have my experiences, that certainly are not on a trajectory to have their parents pay for private college outright. Do you ever sort of regret leaving that place where you can be that mentor, or are you finding other places? Like, how does that interface for you?
I don't regret it. I feel like my time that I gave to teaching and education was that time, but I started a girls mentoring program 8 years ago, Ladies First, and I am the one who brought the girls program to Tacoma Urban League many years ago when it started as Girls with Purpose. So I used to run the program in the summer by offering camps. And when I became the CEO, instead of separately running my business, I folded all of my skills and resources into further developing the girls program here at the Urban League. And I obviously directly manage our male involvement program and the mentors there. But I have continued to meet with girls over the 3 years that I've been here at the Urban League. I continue to run environmental justice camps in the summer. This, because of the pandemic, everything has been on hold, but we had 6 camps already planned, you know, for this summer. But that is how I get my fix of youth development and mentoring others by continuing to be available and create programming and just unique experiences around STEM and community engagement and environmental justice and advocacy, and also things like confidence and self-esteem and just exposing young women to other powerful leaders in our community. So I actually still get to do that because I would miss it if that wasn't the case. But I, on top of being a CEO and a mom and a school board director and all the many other hats that I wear, run a girls program here at Tacoma Urban League. And it typically meets once a week. And I have several volunteers, girls who have kind of graduated through the program and have come back. You know, I have some volunteers who just have supported my Ladies First program and all of my programming for 6 years. I have girls who were in the program for 4 years in high school, volunteered in college, and now come back to give more to the program. There are young girls who have been in my program for 5-6 years since they were, you know, in elementary school, and now they're entering high school. So I still get to do that work as an educator, as a teacher, as a mentor, because I believe in it, and I would never want to separate myself from it. And then here and there, I get, you know, introduced to high school students or college students who, you know, want to come and meet with me or want to have a phone conversation. And so I still get to do other forms of mentoring and the work that we do here. We bring on interns and folks who get to work more closely with me here at Tacoma Urban League. But yeah, I could not have that absent from my life. That would be strange. So I'm not in a classroom in a local high school or middle school, but I have designed a program where I bring the girls to where I am at Tacoma Urban League, or we've gone out on field trips and things like that. We've gone out on hikes, and if folks are interested, they can go to ladiesfirstorg.com or just Google Ladies First and can see just kind of all the amazing things that we continue to do with girls. But I don't miss my traditional classroom teaching. I think I have evolved to being able to provide greater opportunities through this nonprofit for women and girls in our community. And so I am fully invested in doing that and raising money and, you know, paying for scholarships, you know, helping to fund amazing field trips, bringing in partners from National Park Service or REI or, you know, Citizens and Helping, just all these different nonprofits who, you know, serve the community and also care about getting girls, you know, Black girls and girls of color outside, exposing them to these jobs that will exist in the future and are new now. So yeah, I'm so proud of what we get to do. And it's not easy to manage it all, but it is worth it to manage it all.
Speaking of fundraising and women and Black women in the community, I want to shift now to the Black Future Co-op Fund, because you actually started that real recently with three other women. Can you talk about what that fund is about?
So the Black Future Co-op Fund really is our mechanism to support funders and community members who want to invest in the Black community across this state. So the fund is different because it is a statewide fund, and we had to make a quick decision, and this is in partnership with Michelle from the Urban League of Metropolitan Seattle, Andrea from Bird Bar, Angela from Washington STEM, and then, of course, myself representing Tacoma Urban League, but we also represent different parts of the state. Angela has had a deep relationship with the East Side in Spokane and Snohomish, and Andrea and Michelle more King County, and myself more Pierce County. But this was a way for us to raise funds to provide a place where community members could donate larger dollars, I would say. All of our organizations are nonprofits, so, you know, we receive donations all the time, especially with this response from the community that no longer are we going to tolerate white supremacy, and we're standing for Black Lives Matter and going to yell that at the top of our lungs, and no more are we going to be complicit, you know, on the issues of racism and systematic injustices. But we, you know, are in the middle of a pandemic and not everyone can take action, but a lot of folks are committed to funding what needs to happen. So we quickly decided for these folks who want to support what can impact the state, we would create a fund in partnership with All in Washington, the Seattle Foundation. These funds are matched dollar for dollar, which is so exciting. That also was a draw for community members and organizations who would have given to our organizations, but have given more to the fund and have a greater impact because it is matched. So giving $150,000 is now $300,000 and can impact Black-led organizations across the state. So it's exciting. We're in the early stages. We just quickly recognize folks want to help to fund the necessary changes and the things that we have been demanding for years. Our community is listening and they want to invest, and we just need to stand up the infrastructure to receive those funds and, you know, then continue developing how do people access the funds, what will the process be. But we're working with top organizations and funders who make those decisions all the time. So we have the infrastructure, the support, the consultants working with us and doing the necessary PR to get the word out about the fund, but more importantly, to thank the many donors who have invested in the fund. So it's a big deal, but a way to say for those of you who want to help and want to make a larger contribution to the Black communities in this state, here's a way that you can do it and to double your money.
Tawana, you said that there's these lists of things that you've been saying for years that many of you have been shouting at the top of your lungs, and people are now having their ears perk up, taking notice. Some folks have been learning for the very first time the extent that systematic racism has played in things like generational wealth or educational attainment, things like that. How do you regard the sort of awakening of a larger community right now that has sort of this big ball rolling with an investment in things like Black Lives Matter and wanting to support the end to systemic racism?
Professionally, I welcome it. I mean, personally, there are lots of inquiries that I handle differently professionally and personally. And I think I've tried to just keep my professional hat on as much as possible but personally make sure I practice good healing and self-care and just, you know, pacing myself and not trying to personally meet the needs of, you know, newfound interest in the community. But professionally, my job continues to be a teacher and educator here at the Urban League. I mean, what we're known for and how we're different from like an NAACP is, one, we have paid staff whose jobs are to connect the community to resources. And that's, again, anyone who walks through our doors to, you know, we've always taken great pride in saying, if it's not a service we provide, we'll figure it out. We'll make it happen. And I think this was an opportunity for us to say the community is saying it wants to learn how to do better. How to be better, how to show up as a better ally, how to show up as a better Black person or person of color. So this has not been about newfound energy and knowledge and courage for just non-Black folks, but for Black folks who have existed in the system, have tried to be as friendly, as collaborative, who have reduced themselves to not even recognizing themselves to exist in white America. They have finally, some of them, found the courage to say no more. I have to show up fully as who I am, and I have to call you out for the way that you show up, for the way that you oppress me, for the way that you silence me. So we've tried to simply, as an organization, we've tried to be welcoming to all of those voices, to lead and guide all of those voices. So it isn't just, you know, one specific demographic, but, you know, and there have been a couple of, you know, white community members who are like, right now, I want to do something. And it's like, listen, here's my charge for you. Stick around, because we literally do this work 365 days a year. The Urban League has been here 52 years, and it is still relevant today because these issues have not gone away. We've been fighting this fight for, you know, what, 402 years. So it's, don't go anywhere. If you want to do something, don't go anywhere. But it's not about this weekend, this week, while all this energy is here, I have to do something. Stick around. Continue joining. Like, as we reopen and can get back to business, stick around. Or for, you know, there have been some small tasks we've been able to get some volunteers to step into to help us with our capacity. But I just think because we're leaders in education and guiding, this is our lane. So I don't feel offended that some folks are just now arriving. Okay, they're here. What we do at the Urban League is say, you are here. We will meet you where you are and help you to achieve what you want to achieve. And so that is what we are doing for the Black community, for allies who are looking for resources. And again, that's my professional hat. As an Urban League, it is, here's resources for whoever is asking us for resources, and trying to make them available on social media and other places, because we can manage that. But I think as many troops or soldiers that we can have to join this fight, to fight racism, to fight the nasty history and racist culture of our country, I welcome that because it is exhausting. It is exhausting for me personally. It is exhausting professionally to have to say that I matter because I'm Black, to say don't kill me because I'm Black. Like, I deserve to live. I deserve to be employed. I deserve to have wealth. I deserve to have housing. I deserve to live in this community. It's exhausting for our community to have to deal with. So to help and educate more people to understand that experience, that narrative, regardless of when they came to it, is no different than a lot of our reentry work where someone made a mistake. And now they get it. And now they're ready to create a new life and do something different. Well, we are ready to help you. We're going to meet you where you are and help you to achieve your goals. So that is how I feel about the energy. I don't take offense to it. You know, there's always a little side eye like, oh, now you're listening. But the reality is, yeah, now they're listening. And just like we would treat any other, you know, person, like I said, professionally, I think personally, I give a side eye. But professionally, it's like, that's what we do as an Urban League. We meet people where they are. We take it to the next level. They're on our team now. So let's go, you know?
Yeah, it's really challenging. Lots of different facets to that. And through that exhaustion, it's not just you, but lots of folks within your community. Do you have any advice for how to stay centered so you can carry out those goals and sort of rejuvenate in the face of that exhaustion?
Yeah, a little bit of it I spoke of, which is, you know, there has to be more people doing this work. And I'll give an example of what I've been sharing with folks who, you know, work for Black-led organizations, are engaged in social justice, civil rights work, like as their occupation. They don't have to feel bad about not making it to all the protests, all the events. Like, many of us speak to legislators here in Olympia or in Washington, D.C. about the Black experience. you know, we're advocating for these issues all the time. This is not new to many of us. But I just tell folks to allow other people to be the voice, to tap in. I mean, I literally have said no to speaking at like 90% of the protests I was asked to speak at. I said no to participating, one, because the virus is still out there, so I don't want to be in public. But I also am doing this work all the time. So it's like, if there are folks who want to protest and want to get out there and have the capacity, allow new leaders to step in, or folks who are not new but have the time, you know, have the bandwidth to do it. But I think, you know, it's important for our community to, you know, take care of itself, to seek therapy if that's what's needed, to seek quiet time if that's what's needed, to not feel pressured by this energy. I remember early on, there were a couple of calls that I received where it's like, you know, this elected official was calling me and wants me to, you know, tell them what our demands are. This person is calling and they want us to tell them that, and I'm like, nothing about what we have been communicating has changed because of George Floyd's murder. Even defunding the police is not a new narrative. That is nothing new. Criticism of how we're funding public safety and how we need to invest in human services is not something new as far as, you know, messaging is concerned. So don't feel pressured yet again by white dominant culture to step into roles that you are not prepared or equipped to play, or that you don't have the energy to step into. So I think, you know, in order for us to stay resilient and to continue doing this, this is lifelong work. Again, this fight for the Black community has been 400 years deep. So no one can feel pressure to accomplish it all in a weekend or in one protest. But I'm just encouraging folks to take care of themselves, to rest, to reflect, to think, to journal. We're going to be launching paid therapy services in July. So we, you know, and not just for these reasons, but because so many of our community members have experienced loss and confusion due to the pandemic, you know, have been triggered by these, you know, continued murders of Black and brown bodies, are struggling with grief related to coronavirus, and are just having a hard time managing kids at home due to crisis schooling and homeschooling. So we're doing our part to help with healing and to deal with the trauma and the negative impacts of what happens when you are facing all of these pandemics and crises. And I ask the community to tap into these resources that are to take care of our mental health so we can continue doing this fight when all the timelines are different, when all the profile pictures return back, when all the businesses are back, you know, open, and we're not remembering the energy from the protests, to retain some of that energy so we can persist, so we can keep fighting.
Such valuable words, I think. And it also shows that Tacoma and our state and our country really still has a lot of work to do. Apart from the work that still has to be done, what is it that you do appreciate about where Tacoma is right now?
I love that Tacoma talks to each other. Tacoma works together. I love that even when, I'm proud of Tacoma for, you know, standing with community, holding our authority figures and elected officials accountable. But this city is about solutions, and we're not perfect. I have plenty of examples of, you know, when solutions are not as easy to come by in this city, and, you know, have lots of criticism. But I just feel like we function more than other places. We function as a unit. We're in this together. Lots of the people that I work with try really hard to acknowledge that until we are all good, we are not good. Or as we celebrated Juneteenth, until we are all free, we are just simply not free. So these issues are our issues, issues around housing and experiencing homelessness, issues around education, issues around the digital divide. How do we get laptops to students? I was on a beautiful call this morning, a powerful call that is, you know, when we're saying there are about 4,000 slots that will not be occupied by students this summer because summer programming with social distancing and keeping students safe cannot accommodate the normal participation. So that means our students are still going to want the social connection, are still going to need somewhere to be. Our families are still going to be working or looking for work or wanting kids to be out of the house. So how do we as a community provide guidance for how the village takes care of these kids and how we support them and not surveil them? Like those are the kind of conversations we have in Tacoma. How can we get businesses and nonprofits and neighbors to say, these are our babies, and I'm not going to call the police because they're hanging out. I'm going to offer them water. I'm going to leave snacks, you know, on my porch and they can walk up and get them if they need them. I'm going to make sure that, you know, the little library is fully stocked with books, that there are paint resources or arts and craft resources at the park in case kids come by. So we talk to each other and we try to find real solutions, and that doesn't happen everywhere. And again, we're not perfect. That doesn't mean that we don't struggle, and that doesn't mean those conversations are still not including many valuable voices. But I give us credit for trying. I give us credit for loving our community, for wanting better, for wanting, you know, the safest alternatives. I give us credit for trying to be inclusive, and I give us credit for, you know, raising heck when we need to do better. So that's Tacoma, and I'm just happy to play my part to contribute in any way that I can as an Urban League leader.
Well, it certainly sounds, after having this conversation with you, that you are playing a big part in all of those things as the leader that you are. How can folks follow up with you, Twyna, or learn more about the Tacoma Urban League?
Thank you. The easiest way is to contact me through our website, which is thetacomaurbanleague.org, thetacomaurban.org. And there's a contact link where you can contact us, and I receive all of those emails. My email is president@thetacomaurbanleague.org, but just go to our website, check out our programs, follow us on Twitter and Instagram @TacUrbanLeague, follow us on Facebook, but stay up to date on just job postings, events that we have coming up virtually for youth, how we plan to help to keep youth safe and, you know, prepare for reopening and education in the fall. But all of that information can be found on our social media, and that's the best way to also get a hold of me.
Twyna, it's been a real pleasure being able to speak with you about these really broad issues today.
Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed the conversation. Thank you for your questions. And yeah, as always, let me know if there's more that Tacoma Urban League can do. And just thank you so much for your time.
Twyna Nobles is an organizer, an educator, and a twice elected school board member for University Place and the president and CEO of Tacoma Urban League.
Dialing 311 will connect you to the City of Tacoma Non-Emergency Information Line. Dialing 211 will connect you to statewide community resources. Our email address is daily@ktqa.org, or you can call or text us at 253-330-8821. Been having conversations there. Keep them coming. Talk to you guys on Monday.
KTQA LP 95.3, Tacoma.